Welcome to the Natural Running Network. My name is Richard Diaz, and what I hope to do is introduce you to some amazing athletes and luminaries from the sports science community, and what has come to be expected, I'll provide some highly opinionated rants on all aspects of endurance sports and my current favorite, obstacle course racing. But before I get started, I want to give a shout out to Human Octane. If you're the kind of person who pushes the limit, then you've got to check out Human Octane Apparel. Training and racing apparel designed by OCR athletes, and these guys just get it. Everything they make dries lightning fast, has zippered pockets, is abrasion resistant in high contact areas without bulky padding. I've gotten to know these guys, and trust me, they're going to out-innovate the competition when it comes to OCR gear. Check them out at humanoctane.com. Now sit tight, grab a cup of coffee, and let's do this. So I'm going to round out this month, so far, with an interview with a new upcoming elite OCR athlete that has come onto the scene recently and kind of shown his salt at the Montana Beast and Sprint, incidentally. And I've been talking about this a lot. I've been talking about the advent of the new guard, the young guys coming up. And I've made comments about who to watch and comments to other athletes about what they thought about those guys and who they thought they needed to watch out for. And lo and behold, here's one of those guys. And I'm pleased to have Cole Schwartz on the show with me today. Cole, say hello to everybody.
How's it going, guys? Really happy to be here, Rich. Been listening to the podcast for a while now, learned a ton, and excited to be on.
Now, Cole, just for edification for the audience, you've come out to see me, and we've done a little work together, so we know each other.
Yep. I was there for about 5-6 hours, so yeah. We got a lot of work in.
Yeah, it was a good visit. Came up with Johnny Luna, and you guys threw down, and we just went to work and tried to come up with some pearls of wisdom.
Yeah, it was a blast. I learned, it was kind of felt like I'd been in like school, like a class for like 6 hours, but I just had so much that I learned. And when I got home, I just wanted to like write it all down, make sure I didn't forget, but it was definitely a great learning experience.
Cool. So you just took down the, Monterey. You took down the Montana Super, Beast and the Sprint, right?
Yes, I took the win at both of those.
Did you surprise some guys?
Yeah, I think I surprised some guys, and I definitely surprised myself. That was a big race for me coming in. I wanted to do well at it. I just love that course. It's extremely rugged terrain. Most people know it because it used to be an NBC space, but it wasn't this year, so the competition wasn't as intense. But I knew Ian Hosick and Austin Azar were coming out, and it was going to be a battle, and it's always about 14 miles of just bushwhacking. So anyone can come out on top, and I kind of went into it knowing I wanted to win, but wasn't sure if I could, but all ended up well.
Yeah, apparently it did, and came back the following day and won the sprint as well.
Yeah, I came back, recovered really well, and actually felt better the second day. And, just put it all on the line and came out, took the win that day too.
Now you got to forgive me. I don't know who was in the second race. Who'd you beat?
The second, it was the same. So it boiled down to, Ian and Austin again. And then, a few other people, I don't know their exact names, but, the sprint race kind of boiled down to me and Ian taking the lead. Ian kind of took off from me. He's a quick runner, and it was kind of a race to the top of the mountain, and then about a mile and a half to the finish, which is all downhill and a little bit of flat. And we reached the top at the exact same time. He missed his spear, I hit mine, and then full force to the finish line, and I was able to gap him by about a minute 30, which was the burpee penalty. So it would have been a pretty close race if he had hit it, but
That damn
after
spirit,
after
right?
That battle. Yep. Yep. Ian and Austin both missed it both days, so those guys need to work on it a little bit.
And what was the differential between you and second place in the Beast?
About 50 seconds. So Austin missed his spear, and I took the lead there again. So in both races, it was we went to the top of the mountain, and then once I hit the top of the mountain, then there was the spear throw, and then it was just downhill and then a little bit of flat before the finish. So 50 seconds against Austin. So it would have been, if he had hit his spear, it would have been tough to catch him.
So you know what he's doing right now, right?
What's he doing?
Throwing a spear.
Thinking about it? Yeah.
Throwing a spear, sleeping with it?
So. Yeah. Well, I hope they both are because, yeah, it's always fun to it's always fun to take advantage of those opportunities, but it's also fun just to have a really heated race to the finish line.
So do you spend much time with Johnny at the Savage Barn?
I don't spend a ton. I go to school at Western Washington University, so I am really far north in Washington, up in Bellingham. But I'm from the Bay Area, so I'm only an hour away from Johnny. So when I'm home, I go over there, train with him. And, yeah, he's got a great facility over there at the Savage Barn with the rigs, rope climbs, you know, kind of everything that an OCR athlete needs. So I do spend a good amount of time over there.
I'll tell you a funny story. When I went up there, we did a clinic up at the Savage Barn last year. And I think it was my wife and I were watching the NBC reality show thing they were doing. And these folks, like left and right, were missing the spear throw. And I kept making remarks.
Yeah, I saw that.
I kept making remarks about, damn, man, come on. You know, and my wife's like, you can't do it. You can't do it. She kept wearing me out about how I couldn't throw the spear. We got up to the Savage Barn, and you know how he's got that set up. He's got, looks like, you know, a golf bag full of spears and perfect place to toss them, and it's all set up there, and I just could not resist. And I grabbed the first spear, chucked it, nailed it, picked up another one, chucked it, nailed it, and I emptied that quiver of spears, and every single one of them I nailed. And my wife was standing right next to me. Now, I will never let her forget that.
That's impressive. I definitely, the first time I threw spears, I was awful. They were going all different directions and stuff, but I think I got it down now.
Well, the unfortunate end is I can't do any of the rest of it.
Yep, that's important.
So I could be like a designated spear thrower for somebody, I suppose.
There's a lot of people out there that need it, so it wouldn't be a bad thing.
I could sit up there and just get $5 a head, you know, just like, I'll hit the spear for you.
Worth it, definitely.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, I think going into this race and having a kind of a inside track on you as an athlete, I looked at you as a dark horse. I did not expect you to come in here and take it. So congratulations for having done so. What do you think was, aside from the fact that these guys were missing the spear, clearly, either way, you were going to podium. So what would you attribute your success to?
Well, so far, one of like the big things has been just obstacle proficiency. So in my last 9 races, I've made 8 podiums. And the one that I didn't make was the Seattle NBC race, which I knew I wasn't going to come close to that podium. But in those 9 races, I've only missed one obstacle. It was one spear throw. So just putting myself in a position where I'm up there in like podium contention. And then if someone makes a mistake, always being there, but just making sure I'm up there. And that's kind of what I did in Montana. I never had the lead. I was in 3rd and 4th place for the majority of the race up to about mile 9. And then at the log carry, I was able to get into 2nd, be just ahead of Ian Hosek, and then took the lead right after the spear throw. So, and then in the following day, I just kind of put myself in contention and just always trying to push as hard as I can, and then hoping that in the end, maybe someone will make a mistake. And that's kind of what's happened, especially in the Seattle sprint, the day after the NBC race. I was in 4th place for the entire race, and then the second to last obstacle was the Hercules hoist, and Angel Quintero couldn't get it up, and then I was able to pass him and take a podium spot there.
Nice, nice. And help me with this. Did Angel race the NBC race?
Yeah, yeah. He had a little bit. Yeah, he had a tough day there, but yeah, he was out there.
Tell me what you think the number one strength, if I was to point to the strength you have in the sport, what is it?
I would say heavy carries. If you look at the NBC Fialo race, the you know, they always up the carries for those. And the race kind of started out with 4 miles of flat running, and then we hit a double sandbag carry. And I was probably in about 25th place, just way out of contention. We hit the double sandbag carry. And it was about, people say half mile, but I think it might have been a little bit shorter than that. But I was able to catch up to guys like Ryan Woods and VJ and Jesse McKenzie. Just a lot of guys who are, you know, super quick, you know, around like 15 minutes, or even Ryan Woods, like 14 minute 5K runners. But I can catch up on the carries, and that's kind of what helped me again in Montana.
I guess the next question, obviously enough, is what do you feel like you need to work on? But I'm going to guess, I'm going to get way out on a limb and assume that you feel like you need to improve your running skills.
Yes, it would be flat running. My times on my kind of flat runs, my tempos and whatnot, are not as quick as I would like them to be.
Yeah. And obviously enough, that's why you came to see me.
Yep, that's true.
And since you did see me, did we make any changes? Did you find that some of that helped you?
Yeah, I've implemented the motor skill development. So I've been doing those kind of as my, I was doing just kind of like my track workouts, which would be like the repeats and stuff, but I was implementing the motor skill development. So I would have my kind of the cadence going. So at 180 beats a minute, just kind of on my headphones. And then I'm trying to keep good form and then increasing speed until I reached that point where it all fell apart.
Nice.
And then, I also, yeah, I had the heart rate monitor on too, making sure that my heart rate was at recovered enough that I could do another quality repeat.
Good work. Good work. I got to tell you, there's a lot of people that are attempting this right now and they don't quite understand the approach.
Well, it's basically, that you have like a mechanical threshold, as I understand it. And then as you can push that up, then you'll be able to run at a quicker pace and still keep good form. Because I tend to lose it around like a 6 minute mile. I lose and I start overstriding around that point.
Which is breaking.
Or maybe before. Yep.
And all, you know, the whole thing starts falling apart. The wheels fall off the bus right about then, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny because, as a matter of fact, one of my clients that I've been working with for a while now, he just this morning emailed me and said, so, Coach, take a look at my work and tell me, what do you think? How am I doing? And a lot of what we've been working on, he was spot on. He was getting it done. And there was a lot of improvements in the way he's moving relative to the way I found him. In other words, he's been drinking the Kool-Aid, he gets it, and it's really kind of coming together for him. But he just feels like, aside from the running being more effortless in sensation, he's not finding more speed. And so I made the comment to him this morning that what we need to do now is we need to start focusing on the motor skills. Because as I told you when we met, I believe that these motor skill drills are the catalyst for improving your speed and sustainability of pace.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And this is the thing that most people don't get. They don't understand it. They don't do it. And systematically, what I find that is an error is guys get out there and they throw more intensity at bad running mechanics, hoping that one day it's going to help them get faster. And I guess the first part of that is that they don't even realize that the way they're moving is wrong. And throwing more intensity at bad running mechanics is just going to magnify the problem. And ultimately, it starts to slow you down, the cost goes up, and it starts to break you down.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think like the one of the big problems is these like motor skill development workouts that I do, that it's pretty frustrating, especially when you keep losing form so quickly. And then you just kind of don't want to do that. And then you just want to just go out and just hammer a workout.
Right.
But I know that's not the right thing to do.
Right. Well, I got to tell you, the fact that you're identifying frustration, that is part of the solution. Because I'll have people that kind of blow through the mistakes they're making and just punch it into a workout and lose sight of what they're trying to get done. And obviously enough, there's no end game in that. They're just going to continually be slower, and they're not going to get that payback that they're looking for. And I've also had people that they quit doing the workouts because they found themselves getting injured. And that only tells me that the injury is a result of doing it wrong and pushing on it. And obviously enough, if you're doing it wrong and it's hurting, you don't want to do it anymore. So they aren't willing to put up with the frustration. But you're going to get, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I'll bet you dollars to donuts, since you've been doing it right, that you're finding less and less frustration and achieving greater and greater peak velocities without having error.
Definitely. At the beginning, I was struggling to even, I wasn't even good at keeping the 180 cadence, but now I can keep that at just basically any pace that's not incredibly fast, but I've gotten better and better at keeping that for as I increase my speed. So yeah, it's been great.
Well, if I was to give you any advice at all, keep that up, because you're going to start noticing that when you do these drills, if you track it, if you're using a Garmin or whatever device to collect this data, you'll start noticing that your peak velocities start to improve, your recovery times start to drop. And then ultimately what happens then when you're doing the tempo runs and things like that, your sustainable paces come up and your cost factor goes down. And that's exactly what the payback is.
Awesome. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm starting to notice. But yeah, definitely have a lot of work to do. It's not a quick process, but I definitely think it'd be worth it in the long run.
I'll tell you what's even harder than doing that: trying to explain it to people.
Yeah, well, I've listened to a lot of your podcasts. So it definitely took a lot of times to hear it before you start to really listen to it. And I think you've done a good job at just keep saying it to people.
Well, I believe it. You know, I believe it to be true. I've proven it to be true. And I get these handful of athletes that finally get there and they start getting paid by it and they start to really, really do well. And I've been having a good bit of my athletes that came to me where they were not in contention for podium that are now standing on the podium. And I attribute a lot of the success they're seeing to the fact that they finally got that aspect of the training, because it really, 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 in my mind, is the thing that makes the greatest amount of difference in the overall programming. Because you could tell a guy to stay aerobic, and that's got benefit to it. You could have a guy do tempo runs, and that's got benefit to it. But if every time you try to achieve speed, you make mistakes, and you don't do something to correct it, you're never going to get past that. It's always going to be a problem. So logical a thing as it might seem, it's a paradox, because most people don't quite see it or understand it or even be aware of the mistakes that they're making to begin with. So it's good stuff. I'm actually sitting here, aside from this conversation with you, I was writing a book about it. I decided I'm going to write an ebook about finding speed, and it's going to be dedicated to that very thing. And wish me luck with that.
Yeah, no, you gave me your book when I came down, so I went through it, read most of it, a lot of it was stuff that you learned from the podcast and stuff, but always good to have it on paper.
Well, and I got to tell you, I wrote that book like 9 years ago, and it was great for running, but obstacle course racing is a whole nother animal, as you're proving, because it doesn't come down always to the fleet of feet. You've got to have the whole package. And I think that it's easier to get the details organized with the obstacles than it is to get the details organized with your ability to run. And that becomes the thing that is most important. But at the same time, you can't just be, as you've seen and as you see, there's a lot of guys out there that can run like a deer, but when it comes down to heavy carries and things like that, it just breaks them.
Yeah. I think the one thing I got going for me right now is I'm willing to work on the speed right now, and that's what I'm trying to do. But I'm all around solid on the obstacles and carries and stuff, and pretty decent on the runs.
So you're going to Monterey, right?
Going to Monterey, that's the next one.
Would you consider that an A race?
Yeah, I would. It's going to be my first time at that venue, so don't have a lot of experience, but I know you do, so I'd like to hear maybe a little bit about what you're having, Hunter and stuff, prepare for that one.
Well, you got to realize that every individual is unique. Their deficits and their strengths are unique. And so what I might recommend for you may be different than what I recommend for him. But we had some principal ideas, and I mean, it's really simple, quite frankly. It's not rocket science. I need him to stay ahead of these guys in the run. Because with Hunter, he's strong enough to get through the obstacles. He's probably one of the toughest guys in the carries because he's such a big guy. He's stronger than most everybody in the sport. And I don't know if you agree with that, but I'll tell you.
I agree. Yeah, totally.
I mean, I work with the guy, and I don't know anybody that is as strong as he is and as fast as he is. It's just a function of putting all these components together and showing up in good race weight and have enough volume and dedicated training under his belt. So with Hunter, to me, it's a function of consistency. I want to make sure that he's staying on point with his training, not getting random and doing crazy stuff that gets in the way of his training. And that's tough for him. I got to tell you, it's just, if I was him, and I know him well enough to understand the concept, it's just, you get these offers to do things, and sometimes they're tough to pass up, and it gets in the way. But I know he's coming into this race serious about getting on that podium. And he lost that race last year because of one obstacle. And I know that he's been working on that Tyrolean ladder. He looked like, I keep making comments about the fact that he looked like a dolphin in a tuna net.
Yeah, I saw the video.
And Ryan Atkins just kind of rammed it down his throat, and there, that was the end of it. But he should have won that race, and I think it's going to be a tough race. It's going to be A-tier athletes are going to show up for that. You're going to have your hands full.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty similar to the Seattle, the competition-wise, with the, I guess, added Hunter being out there. But I'm like more excited for that course than I was for Seattle, which was just a flat course for the majority of the race. But I hear Monterey has 2,500 feet of gain or something like that. So I'm excited for that.
And the way the hills in that event come about is they're progressively steeper. So it starts out not as steep, and at the very end of the race is the steepest climb. You got to rein back for that a little bit.
Okay, that sounds more like my style of a course. Like the Montana course was a lot more my style of course than the Seattle one, which I don't know, probably had less than 500 feet of elevation gain.
You know, I read a post a couple days ago that Ryan had put up. He had indicated that he got injured.
Oh yeah, the Bruce Trail where he was running about 500 miles.
Is it 500 miles? I just know that he hurt himself, and I don't know. It's really soon, really close to this race. I don't know how that's all going to shake out for him.
I do. Yeah, that'll be a big thing. But I've always been just amazed by his ability to win races that basically he shouldn't have won, because he's been perfect, kind of on the obstacles and stuff. And that's kind of what I've been trying to do, is just kind of make it be perfect on all the obstacles. And like, if you take Seattle, for example, probably Killian should have won that race, but he made mistakes, and Atkins doesn't. So I think in Monterey, it's going to boil down to, if anyone makes mistakes, he's going to capitalize again.
Well, that seems to be the thing with him. You're absolutely right. He masters the deal. He goes into it with the confidence that he's not a stressed athlete. When he goes through these obstacles, he doesn't seem to have the stress that a lot of these other guys have. And that seems to be one of the redeeming factors for him. He's obviously an all-around athlete. He can run. He can master these obstacles pretty well. He can climb. He's tough. There's no question about it. He's a real tough athlete. I just fear that being injured, that could be a bit of a problem for him. He's going to need to be 100% in this race if he's going to win it.
Yeah, and we are 3 weeks out, so losing training right now wouldn't be ideal.
Yeah, and I wouldn't count out guys like Hobie Call, Killian, or even Chad Trammell. Any of those guys, any of those guys who show up are going to be, it's going to be a tough race. It's going to be fun to watch, and I'm not going to bet on anybody.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's my last one before me and Johnny Luna are heading to Europe for about 2.5 months. So
that's right.
We won't be here for any more of the NBC races, but we'll be heading there.
Johnny's going to race too, right? Monterey?
Yeah, he will.
What are your thoughts about that?
You know, the guy, the guy's fit. So, or he's getting fit, and he's been smart about his recovery from getting his stress fracture. So it's going to be interesting to watch, but first race back, you never really know. So it's just going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, well, he impressed me. There's no question about it. When he came out with you, I had no preconceived notion as to what his capabilities were. But that VO2 score was huge. And, I mean, you witnessed it. He was running like a deer on that treadmill after we got working on things. And I talked about it for a while. I was impressed with his ability. So I don't know. I've never seen him in a race to know how he holds up when he's faced with competition and obstacles, but the raw talent seemed to be there.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. I was definitely impressed when I saw it too. But you know, in OCR, it's just totally different. You never know, because you know, guys like Ryan Woods, who are fast guys, they're not the ones who are on the podium at these NBC races. It's the all-around athletes, so it's always hard to know until you see them race.
That's exactly right. Well, what do you think about the women's field? Just since we're, you know, educated athletes talking about this kind of thing, do you have any favorites?
I think it's just really cool this year. Like last year, if you look at the men's field, at all the races, it was like a five-man race. You know, you had Killian, you had Atkins, Hunter, and then a few other people, Ryan Kent, they're all up there. But in the women's field, it was kind of just a two-woman race. It was Lindsay and it was Faye. But this year, there's just a way bigger pool of quality athletes with Alyssa Holly, Nicole, Rhea Coble. So it's a lot more exciting to watch. Last year, it's kind of Lindsay dominating and Faye right behind. But this year, it's going to be super interesting to see how it all plays out.
It's a crapshoot, no question.
Yeah, so I think it's just going to bring – it's a lot more entertaining to watch than it was last year. And it'll be cool to watch. Alyssa was over in Montana, and she won that beast. And she actually came, from what I heard, she was behind for the majority of the race, and then around the same spot that I took the lead, I'm pretty sure she took the lead, which was on the log carry on the top of the hill, and then it was spear throw and then some downhill running. And I just heard she flew down the downhill and took the win there. So she's definitely in really good shape. And it seems like that Monterey course is going to be kind of up her alley.
Yeah, the biggest thing I think right now, and the factor that's going to kind of determine who wins and who doesn't, is just the health of the athletes. I know that everybody's trying really hard to be in shape for these events. I know just from conversation with the two of them, Nicole and Alyssa, they both have been having some hip issues that have plagued them. And when you got a lot of big hill races and you're going after it with some great intensity, that can be a real serious problem. So I'm a little concerned about that. This Rhea Coble has been looking pretty good, and it's really tough to say. I know Lindsay's probably feeling like she needs to get back in the game. I don't know precisely what's holding her up. I know that the long course events that they're starting to lend themselves towards, since they're involved with the Toughest Mudder community, I don't know whether that's changing gears for her a little bit. I don't know. I don't know, but it's going to be interesting however you see it.
Yeah, well, it seems like a lot of people are adding more volume to keep up with these longer races and stuff, and it's leading to some injuries. And that's one of the big reasons why my coach, we do a pretty minimal running program where we only run 4 to 5 days a week, but it's all quality, and we don't mess around with the easy days, just trying to get in the mileage. We just don't do that, and we keep it all quality, and it seems to keep everyone healthy.
How many miles do you think you're getting a week?
Probably around like 30 to 40, maybe sometimes even a little bit under that, but definitely nothing more than 35 to 40.
And what's your weight right now?
170.
Okay. Is that up or down for you, or is that pretty common?
It was probably around 165 to 170 the majority of last year. Yeah, it's been pretty common. When I was just a cross country and track runner in high school, I was like low 150s, but since adding more strength training to keep up with like the obstacles and stuff, yeah, it's been about that. But I'd probably want to be around like 165.
I was just going to say, I like you at about 160, 165. 165 probably being about the higher weight for you. You know, when you get down to just 5 pounds, it matters. It's a significant drain on your energy cost and also your pace.
Do you got any, what are your like tips for that besides just increasing volume?
Well, I'm with you on the idea that everything you should do with purpose. You don't just do it just to add it. I don't like junk miles either, but there's purpose behind everything you do. That's why even when I wrote that book, I don't use jargon like tempo and some of these indiscriminate terms for like fartlek for your running. I like to call it what it is. So like lactate tolerance training is precisely that. Your intention is to improve your ability to support this production of lactate and deal with it. Your base runs are about improving your aerobic performance, and the motor skill drills are improving your mechanics. So you put those three elements together in a training program and then progressively add volume to it. And then it's not just about trying to achieve a particular number. It's a function of achieving a particular number because you can. And I believe that more running is critical, but not at the risk of just throwing down some slop and hoping that it's going to help you, if that makes any sense at all. So
no, yeah.
I'd like to see you probably in and around 50, 60 miles a week. I think you could still do that and have the work be quality. I'd like to see that the volume of work that you put in is the reason that your weight dropped, not because you cut back on your nutrition. I like to feed my athletes, make sure that they're taking on appropriate nutrient and feeding themselves well, getting enough rest, putting in, you know, the recovery work, and then just putting in the work. So I think you're probably going to get topped out in your ability to do the obstacles. I think that happens with most elite athletes that get to a place where they're good enough to get through the obstacles and have a clean race. You don't really shave that much time off the obstacles, save possibly the heavy carries. So that's a strength component, right?
Yeah.
So it really does get down to the running, and you can't sacrifice good muscle because you're going to need that, right? And I think that's what happens to some of these guys. They're really fast, but they're not strong enough. And you get the guys that are really strong, but they're not fast enough. So it's just kind of a blend of concerns that you have to focus on. But I think you're on point. I think what you're doing is working for you. I just wouldn't get hypersensitive to the weight. But in a perfect world, I'd like to see you down a little bit. I think if you're down even 5 pounds, you'd be surprised how much 5 pounds influences your overall pace and your cost of work.
Yeah, I'm sure. I would definitely. I'm gonna try. Yeah, I'm gonna try and see if I can get that down for Monterey. But I did have a question about that. Would you have me run 7 days a week then?
No. I don't think that the number of days that you run is the ticket. I'd rather see you even do double workouts during the week. Make sure that you maybe even 2 days off, complete days off. You could get it done in 5 days worth of training, I believe. You could probably get more quality if you do it that way. So for example, and I'm not writing program here at the moment, but just hypothetically, let's just share this. I'd like to see you get out of bed in the morning and put in a base run, even if it's only an hour, and then get on with your day. And occasionally you come back in the evening and put in some quality work, whether it be some hill repeats, working on motor skills, maybe even doing a little bit of what you call tempo running or what I call lactate tolerance drills. And maybe only you follow up with 30 minutes. So you got a 90-minute workout in that day as opposed to, you know, trying to put together 60 minutes in the morning and then the day catches you and then you're done. And then I didn't even include the potential for the strength work. I think you could probably get away with 2-3 days worth of strength work. We never talked about this very much, but I like to see the strength work be all-encompassing functional work. I don't like to see isolated movements. I think they're a waste of time. Obviously, you need to do task-specific work. So grip strength, obviously a big deal, making sure that you're keeping that all tightened up. And then it becomes just a function of maintenance, I think, where the strength is concerned. Then it becomes a function of getting your wheels together and you're running. But you could probably nail that in 5 days if you're careful. And I know you got a heavy schedule. How many hours a day are you in school?
Only like 2 to 3.
Okay, so it's not too heavy. You got a job?
No, I don't.
What a life. Man, oh man.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty sweet gig right now. So I'm definitely enjoying it. And, you know, I can train in the morning and then school, a little train in the afternoon, rock climb in the evening, and just repeat.
Yeah. Wow, nice. I think that's what it takes. Yeah, you got to have that levity. You got to have that time levity to be able to do the quality work. If you're holding down 8 or 10 hour work or work day, I should say, it gets tough.
Yeah, especially if you're trying to do double workout days. Yeah, I've noticed that.
Back in the day, I had a friend of mine who was, you're too young to remember, but there used to be a thing known as the Sub-4 race team. Sub-4 was an apparel company, and the Sub-4 race team was referring to a sub-4-minute mile. And I had a friend who I brought out to compete in a race that I put on. It was a half marathon. And this guy was a professional runner. And he was running, I think his PR for the marathon was 2:14. And that wasn't even his distance. He ran a sub-4-minute mile in high school. And I mean, just a great athlete. But I recall that his workouts, he would run 6 days a week, and he would run 2 6-mile runs a day. He'd run 6 in the morning and 6 in the evening. And sometimes he would double up and do a long run on the weekend. But he got to a place where the 6 and 6, the split workouts, were just very, very manageable for him. Now, mind you, he was a runner. He wasn't doing obstacle course racing, so that kind of changes the complexion of things. But the fact of the matter is, the guy could run just an amazing pace for a half marathon, and he was just so accustomed to being able to run well at any given distance because of the sheer volume that he was putting in. You know, so if you just do the math, you could see that he was like knocking down 100-mile weeks, and a lot of the pro runners are doing that. But I like the two-a-days. I think that if you can put them in your schedule well enough and you're fit enough to take them on, I think it's smarter to get in hard work and get in hard recovery. I did a podcast a month ago with Stephanie Bishop. And she said it best, I think. She said, I tell people to recover harder than you train. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And so many people are so bent on staying busy that they never get the quality recovery that their body really requires. I just love to hear an endurance athlete of her caliber put that into words. You know, she says, recover harder than you train.
So, recovery is, one of the keys of my training right now. I compete with Team AMA, advanced movement athletics with, so we got like Matt Kempson, Ryan Kempson, Ian Hosick, and, we train using the Prodenco method, which is using water and land exercises to kind of like maximize our recovery as well as kind of balance, mobility, coordination. And I've been doing that for about 5 months and definitely seen some great benefits of being in the water and getting the recovery from that and then not putting in all the junk miles.
So when you say be in the water, what do you mean?
So we have a variety of different workouts that we do in the water where we will have flotation belts and we are just working on mobility as well as sometimes we'll do our core workouts in there. Endurance days might be in there, which we'll attach bands to our feet and then we can do running with resistance in variety of movement while the water allows for zero impact. It's cool stuff. If anyone wants to learn more, train with AMA.com and, all
AMA.com.
The,
all of our, to look it up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, well, you've seen Ryan Kempson, Matt Kempson, Ian Hosick, you know, all frequent podium finishers and that's how they all train. That's how I got into it and been working with them for the past 5 months and it's been very cool.
Good. Good. Well, all I can say is, come Monterey, that's where the rubber's going to meet the road. I think that's going to be a very competitive race for the season. I'm excited because I'm going to be there. Everybody's going to be running better because I'll be there.
Okay.
And you know why?
I'm going to be running better?
Yeah.
Why's that?
You know why?
Yeah.
I'm cooking.
Why? Yeah, that's true. It's true.
The secret sauce, buddy. You've heard people use that term, the secret sauce. The secret sauce is in my pasta.
Okay, so yeah. I gotta come to the
the carbo load party, dude. And I, you know, as you had mentioned or brought up the fact that I'm going to do this instrument assisted soft tissue mobilization. I know it's a mouthful, but the whole study of the influence fascia has on performance and understanding how to manipulate fascia. In order to get you talk about mobility, range of motion, things like this. It all comes down to the way your facial alignments are working out, your tensegrity in the body. And getting these tools on and just kind of getting things happy and functioning and working in order pays really big dividends. It's kind of a mystical science right now. But I've been using the tools. I got certified to do the work. And I found it to be very, very helpful for a lot of people that I've worked with, especially people that are on the cusp of injury, pulling them out of the hole and helping them get to a better place quickly. It's been good. Now, clearly, I'm not going to have time or inclination to go to work on 100 people, but first come, first serve. I know Alyssa Holly wants to spend some time with me. We're going to try to do a little bit of work while I'm there pre-race. And I think Nicole's going to come. Ryan Kent said he might show up. I know that with the Spartan Pro team that they're going to have a full agenda with the media and what have you. So who knows? But worst case scenario, you and I will sit down and eat about 45 pounds of pasta pre-race, right? Get a good carbo load going.
Sounds good to me. Then race hard.
All right. Well, look, Cole, I'm going to see you up there. I really am proud of the work you're doing. I think you're doing a great job. I think you're part of that new guard. You know, I keep saying it. These old guys, eventually it's going to catch up with them, and you young guys are going to start passing them. And I think that you represent that new guard. So these guys got to start paying attention.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I really appreciate hearing that. And, yeah, I hope to just keep on working hard and moving up in the ranks.
Win, right?
I did last weekend. Got to keep it rolling now.
That's right.
Now I got to focus on the big races.
You know what they say, what did you do for me lately, right?
Yeah, it's true.
thanks for coming on the show, and we'll make a point to get together when we get up to Monterey.
Sounds good. Great talking to you.
All right, buddy. Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.